Hello, you are listening to the Beyond the Jargon podcast on CFUV 101.9 FM. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge with respect the Lekwungen-speaking peoples on whose traditional territory the university and CFUV stands, and the Songhees, Esquimalt, and Wasanish peoples whose historical relationships with the land continue to this day. I'm a guest on this land, and I'm extremely grateful for the experiences and the life it has given me while I've been here. I'm Sam Kaiser, I use he, him pronouns, and I'm a master's student studying music technology, and I'm in the final semester of my studies. My research is mainly focused on the implications of the growing popularity of immersive audio formats on popular music. Welcome to all new and returning listeners to the podcast. This is the second episode of 2024, and I'm super excited to get right into it. For any new listeners, here's a quick little rundown of what we do on the show. Beyond the Jargon exists to give a platform to graduate students at UVic so they can discuss their research in an accessible and non-formal way. I'll be interviewing graduate students from various faculties at different points in their academic careers, asking them about their research topics, their experiences as grad students, and what their future plans may be. Today's guest is Cleo Yong. Cleo is a second-year master's student in musicology, focusing on a very interesting piece of contemporary Mexican opera.
My name is Cleo. I'm from North Vancouver. I've been here since September of 2017, I think, so quite a while, and I'm in my second year of my master's in musicology.
So you mentioned you've been here since 2017, so you did your undergraduate here as well.
I did, yeah.
What brought you to Victoria and UVic for that, as well as your graduate program?
I wanted to study with the Lafayettes. Mm-hmm. I liked the chamber music program that they had set up, the Lafayette String Quartet, and I also liked that Victoria was close to my family, so I could visit them often, but also I could have my own life slightly farther away from them as well.
And just for people who don't know, the Lafayette String Quartet were at UVic for the past few years, but now they're not.
Yes, they retired last year, I think.
So you studied violin with them for your
undergraduate? I did. I studied violin with them for my whole degree. I had private lessons with a few of them and studied in various ensembles with them as well.
I wasn't here in 2017. Obviously, I came in 2022, I guess. But I was really lucky to be a tech for their last concert over the summer. And I was just blown away by the feedback they got and how many people came. And it was just a packed concert. And it was just awesome to see how supportive and how much they've impacted so many students over the years.
Sure.
Was there anything about the program specifically at UVic that brought it to your attention? Let's talk about your graduate program now. So you mentioned the Lafayette String Orchestra for your undergraduate degree. So for your graduate degree in musicology, why did you decide to stay at UVic?
Well, I met Dr. Virginia Acuna when I was doing my undergrad, I believe, or at least I knew of her during that time. And I had research interests that were very similar to her own research interests. And so I came here to study with her, which I am now doing, obviously.
For sure.
That was the main reason I wanted to stay.
And Dr. Acuna is your supervisor for your thesis.
Yes.
Could you just kind of talk about what that field is, what specifically Dr. Acuna's research kind of falls into and what your research into your thesis kind of falls into as well?
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Acuna's research, from what I can remember, is it's about Baroque Spanish music. Mm-hmm. And mine, it's not on Spanish music, but it's on Mexican music.
Okay.
And there weren't a lot of people in Canada that have done research on Spanish or Latin American music. Mm-hmm. So that's the main similarity, but we both have interests in music on the stage, such as opera, and gender as well in music.
So your focus into Mexican and Latin American music is also with a focus on gender as well and how that's represented on stage and through the music?
Yeah. So I've done a lot of research on gender and race in relation to Mexican music. I'm currently focusing on nationalism in Mexican music, though. So it's a lot of variety in the topics in relation to Mexican music.
For sure. And so you mentioned Dr. Cunha's focus on Baroque music. For your focus for Mexican music, do you have a time period that you're looking at specifically, or kind of like, is that a broad range?
For me specifically, I'm focused on an opera that was premiered in 1948.
Okay.
So it's not part of the Baroque period.
Yeah, it's very, very recent.
Yeah, it is. But there's still a lot of resources that we can share that are about related topics to both of our interests.
Yeah, totally. So, and this piece, what's the piece called?
It's called La Muleta de Cordoba.
La Muleta de Cordoba. Yeah. Great. And is it still performed now?
It's not hugely performed. It's been performed a few times since it's been premiered, but there's little record of it. There's not many recordings of it or anything.
Yeah, I think I remember you mentioning this last year because we took a class together.
Yeah.
And you mentioned this as part of, we were doing like a grant proposal assignment. I think you mentioned this was what you were interested in, and this was kind of that there weren't many recordings or there weren't many active, like, I guess, primary resources for you to draw from. I suppose. Yeah. Well, let's dial it back a bit. I'm sorry, I kind of went a bit on a tangent there, just curious about your research, but we'll go back to kind of talking about transitioning from your undergraduate degree into your graduate degree. How is the application procedure for your program going into a different field of study within the same department? Was there anything difficult about it? And were there any interesting prerequisites, interviews, or associated activities?
It wasn't particularly difficult in my experience. It included writing a few, I think it was two research papers, and submitting my transcripts along with those. And I had already written research papers that I could submit because I had taken music history classes throughout my undergrad, and so it was a matter of choosing the ones I was most confident with and editing those further before I could submit it. It was a lot different from entering my undergrad because that also included an interview and an audition on my instrument.
Sure,
and
yeah.
So comparatively, it wasn't particularly difficult.
Totally. Yeah, for sure. I think that's something that you kind of noticed too with, like, when I was applying to different programs too, there were more portfolio pieces, audition pieces. But I think with research, they just want to see the quality of your writing and the quality of your research, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's great to hear that the UVic undergrad program, like with your music history classes that you maybe took with Dr. Acuna even, they prepared you for this application process. Because I'm sure, did you apply to any other programs as well?
I applied to one in Ontario, but I decided to stay here.
Why would you want to go there? I was in Ontario for a few years. It's colder than here. But yeah, that's great. And it's great that it's really just prepared you and actually gave you literal resources that you could use for your application process into grad school. So that's pretty easy. That's pretty great. How has, or perhaps hasn't, your undergraduate work led you in the direction of your current research? So you were a performance major in your undergrad.
I was a musical arts major.
Okay.
It's similar to a performance major, but I don't have as much of an emphasis on having a whole recital that I have to perform as one of my program requirements.
But performance was still, you still
took performance. Performance was still a good chunk of my degree.
Of course, yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, so was there a reason why you didn't pursue performance like more in the future? Or what drew you more towards a research focus?
Well, I've always really liked writing and research because I also studied English throughout my undergrad.
Okay.
So it's always been sort of equal to performing in terms of what I want to be doing. And I think that there's, for me, it opens up more career options. I don't have all of my focus on playing the violin. I'm taking a class where I am able to perform music still, so I'm still working on those skills, but I'm able to focus on my research skills and being able to put together big written projects that allow me to work on my transferable skills for, like, if I wanted to go into politics or some other writing related career.
Or a further research career.
Or
teaching even, maybe, being a professor. Yeah. I kind of agree that it's really important to broaden yourself, especially at university. I think there's kind of this assumption that people make about arts degrees or even degrees in the humanities that you're not really learning anything or you're not really like actively learning any skills, but you are. You're learning so many skills. You're learning how to organize your thoughts, how to do research, how to write clearly, how to communicate effectively, how to appeal to an audience. That's a big thing too that I think a lot of people kind of miss when they're just doing math.
And also lots of time management skills.
Of course.
Because when you're putting together a recital, you have to start learning your music months in advance, otherwise it won't get done.
And that's on top of all of your other studies, and that's also like collaborating with other musicians. Can I ask what class you're taking right now that you're still performing in?
I'm taking a class that it's compiled of composers and performers, and the composers are writing music for the performers specifically enrolled in that class. And we're organizing a recital planned for the end of this semester.
I've heard about this class. Megan is in this class.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, sounds awesome. And again, if we're talking about like transferable skills and things, being able to just like collaborate with people coming from different backgrounds, because music is very broad, right? We have people coming to study performance, like we've mentioned, research, like we've mentioned. I'm doing technology, which is kind of even like further removed in some ways. And then we have composers as well. And that sounds like a great course. I kind of wish I was able to take it, but I wasn't able to take it this year. But it sounds like a great way to just kind of bring everybody together. Because I do think in some departments and even in music, even though we are a pretty collaborative department, even among undergraduates and graduate students, there is some separation that occurs. Like it just kind of happens because you don't take the same courses. But I'm happy to see like more interdisciplinary approaches. And that's taught by Joanna Hood, is it?
Joanna Hood and Anthony Tan.
Great. So, and Joanna Hood is...
She's a violist.
Violist. And Anthony Tan is a composer. And he also is focused on like electroacoustic music in some ways too, which is also good to see like...
Yes.
little representation from my side. Great. So just talking about your research a little bit more in depth, if you could sum up your research goals for yourself in one sentence, what would it be? Doesn't have to be one sentence. It can be a little bit longer than one
sentence.
Yeah, no worries.
So research goals as in
like
what am I researching?
Yeah,
or research
maybe like,
goals as in what do I want to do with my research?
How about we split it up? How about we do one sentence? Well, how about like your thesis statement kind of thing? Like for your research, and then what you want your research to do for you, or like where you want it to lead you, something like that.
Okay. So a lot of what is studied in music history is focused on Western music and culture. So music that's written in Europe and is associated with that part of the world. So I'm hoping to add to the non-Western field of musicology and making information about Latin American music and its incorporation of Mexican folk music more accessible to everyone and just, basically that.
bring it more into the light, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So more specifically, what I'm researching is how nationalism is portrayed in an opera, La Mulata de Cordoba, and how this nationalism is portrayed differently from the two operas that it was premiered with.
Okay. Interesting.
Because there was a lot of growing need for cultural unification and political unification in Mexico in the early 20th century because there was the Mexican Revolution. And so this unification was promoted through the arts. And so music is part of the arts.
So if we could dive a little deeper into that too, I'm just curious about, so you mentioned La Muleta de Cordoba was premiered with two other operas.
Yeah.
They were both operas or they were two?
They were both operas.
They were both operas. So all three are operas.
Yes.
Great. Okay. So the three operas, and you say you're looking to kind of compare and contrast between how they represent nationalism.
Yeah. There's one composer called Carlos Chavez who really aligned himself with this cultural unification of Mexico. And so he was in the position to be organizing different concerts within Mexico.
So he was a big figure. And like also, I guess, a patron of the arts in some ways too?
Okay. Yeah.
He was a composer.
Well, he was a composer.
But he was also like a national figure in some ways. Not really?
Kind of.
just an important person.
He was an important composer.
Sounds good.
And so he organized this concert to promote Mexican nationalism. And this concert contained three operas, one of which is the one that I'm focusing on, and then I'm comparing the three operas together or against each other.
So I guess, not to spoil your thesis or your research, but this is kind of the point of the podcast too, to kind of just bring your research to light and kind of talk about why it's important. Why did you choose La Muleta de Cordoba?
Well, I was originally interested in writing about gender and race and exoticism. Mm-hmm. And those three things in a piece of music from Mexico, written in Mexico by a Mexican composer. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I chose this opera, mm-hmm. because I was able to write about those things about a piece I was interested in. And then I ended up switching to write about nationalism and this opera instead, mm-hmm. because it was suggested to me that it would make a more significant contribution to the field of musicology.
Especially for this region, or just
in general? Yeah. So that's how I ended up writing about this opera, was because I was originally writing about this opera in relation to other topics, mm-hmm. but it also ended up working to write about this opera in relation to nationalism.
And I'm sure you gained a really deep understanding of this opera from various points of view, like through gender and race, like you were kind of talking about.
Yeah.
And then you can all sort of apply some of those ideas as well to this nationalism idea as well. Because I'm sure they come up in this nationalist, I guess the nationalist views that it was trying to point out or bring out. Mm-hmm. What were the other two operas? Not to quiz you if you don't remember. But
one of them is called Carlotta.
Okay.
And the other one is called Elena. I'm pretty sure. There's a few discrepancies in the articles I've read.
Sure.
Most of them say that the other opera is called Elena, so we'll just leave it there.
So those two are both women's names.
Yes.
And La Muleta de Cordoba is also
referring
to
a woman.
Okay, yeah.
But the woman in this opera, La Muleta de Cordoba, mm-hmm. isn't given a name in the opera, so she's... That's why it's called, like...
Yeah, there's no name.
There's no name in the title.
Okay, but the main character is...
Is a woman.
Is a woman.
Yeah.
Okay. And my Spanish is super rusty. La Muleta de Cordoba, that's also a racial name.
It is. Yeah.
And it's obviously like an artifact of the time, mm-hmm. but also perhaps maybe a reason why she doesn't have a name or she isn't given a name.
Yep.
And I'm also, again, assuming that Carla and Elena... Was it Carla? Is the first one?
Carlotta
and Elena... are white women?
They are, yes.
So this is why you've chosen La Muleta de Cordoba. Yeah, I totally see why you would also first go to gender and race, because that's kind of clearly there. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know much about Mexican opera. I know a little bit about opera. We have strong female characters in a lot of operas that usually carry the shows, even if the representation of them is not always the most feminist in our view at the moment. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's interesting to choose this very contrasting piece to the other two and then take it in a way that isn't exactly how most people would think about it, I guess, mm-hmm. originally. Because I do think, like, you taking this piece makes sense to talk about gender and race. Like, mm-hmm. that, it's right there for you.
Yeah.
Like, that point is there for you. And then spinning it to talk about nationalism is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Could you maybe just expand on that, about how it differs in representing nationalism than the other two, where a white woman is sort of the centerpiece of the play, or mm-hmm. of the opera?
So this opera, La Muleta de Cordoba, it's based on a legend, a Mexican legend. Mm-hmm. So that's the basis for the plot. And it also uses elements of regional folk music from Mexico, mm-hmm. Whereas the other operas are not based on legends. They're based on the French occupation in Mexico, mm-hmm. Rather than a legend that's based on the Spanish occupation of Mexico, which is the case of La Muleta de Cordoba.
Okay.
And the other two operas are focused on the French leaders.
Okay.
I don't know what word to use.
Sure.
The French people who were in Mexico making all the decisions. Mm-hmm. So it's focused on those characters rather than a character who is either indigenous or black or a combination of those two, mm-hmm. which is...
To the region. Yeah. You mentioned Mexican folk music too and how it plays a part in mm-hmm. the opera. I'm assuming the other two operas are more French sounding, based on French operas or Italian operas, I guess.
Well, The other two operas, as far as I know, don't necessarily include Mexican folk regional music.
Okay.
They have more of an influence from European music.
Mm-hmm.
They don't completely exclude Mexican okay. what we would consider to be Mexican music.
Sure.
But they have a greater influence from Europe. They include genres or forms such as waltzes,
sure.
which lots of people typically don't associate with Mexico.
Of course. Yeah, for sure. I'm kind of forgetting myself too. This was in 1948 is when it first came out. So there was much to take from, I guess, in terms of, and lots of knowledge in terms of French operas, Italian operas. It wasn't the start of the Baroque period or where operas were kind of just starting. Yeah, I guess whenever I think about opera or music of this kind, my brain goes way back. I start thinking about my music history isn't very good, but this 1700s, I guess, is that opera time?
Yeah.
That's opera time? Okay. It's interesting to talk about, too, more modern opera, because these were new pieces at the time, I was assuming,
yes.
too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. So, La Muleta de Cordoba almost exclusively uses Mexican folk music, or?
It includes elements of it.
Okay.
So, it's not based on any specific folk song or anything, mm-hmm. but it includes various rhythms that are characteristic of the folk music and different, it sort of imitates dance music at some points, which is characteristic of a lot of the folk music.
Let's maybe go back to talking about the music department and kind of talking about that class that we were talking about and working with your peers. There are other musicology students at UVic at various levels. How has the work of your peers influenced your own research and the work of others in your field? I guess what I mean by that is the peers around you also approaching various different research topics, I'm sure wildly different from each other. And then also if you've encountered any other people who are kind of studying similar regions to you, maybe they're studying the same opera as you, how have they changed the way that you look at your own research?
So, yeah, like you said, all of my peers are researching very different topics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to know exactly what everyone is researching in detail because a lot of what we do is so independent from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of hard to compare or take a huge amount of influence from the topics of others when they're so different from my own.
For sure.
But all of them, I hear of their study habits, their work habits. I see their work progressing through presentations that we do for each other. And I can see they're all working really hard. So that I definitely admire about them. And it sort of encourages me to also hold myself to that same level. But also, there's a few others that I believe are researching folk music in other parts of the world and other music.
Mm-hmm.
And so that probably hearing about their research regarding folk music, even though it's completely different from the way I'm studying folk music, it still sort of got me thinking about how to incorporate that into my own research.
For sure.
Yeah.
Also maybe kind of looking at resources and things like that.
Yeah.
Like with these other students who are studying folk music, how to actually find resources that talk about this. Maybe there are different databases you can use and things like that too.
Yeah.
I have a couple of music specific questions that I also sent you. This is kind of topical. I thought of this question because I went to Queen's University for my undergrad and they're in some sort of financial trouble. I don't know, but they're talking about removing certain arts programs and arts courses and things like that. My question is, why do you think strong interest in higher education and the arts has persisted for so long, even in the face of these budget cuts, closures, and you hear all these things all the time, I feel like, as a student. Why do you think there's strong interest still prevails?
I don't know. I think people don't necessarily go into higher education in music expecting to have the easiest time finding a reliable, good paying job, but they do it because they really want to be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just trust themselves to figure out a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of transferable skills that you can get from a music degree. So if you really love playing your instrument and you want to go into a music program, you can still get something out of it if you're not going to continue in music after you graduate? I don't know.
Yeah, of course. No, I totally agree. I think that's a reason why I did it. I just love it. I couldn't see myself studying math or studying computer science or whatever. Like, yeah. I think there's just an inherent love and dedication to whatever instrument you play or whatever you're interested in, and also to yourself, right? About like just trying to express yourself in the ways that make you happy. Mm-hmm. And you've already answered this. You are a musician yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you find that your research has influenced your own artistry in any way?
Well, it's introduced me to a lot of music I didn't know about before, a lot of new composers and pieces that I now really like mm-hmm. and want to play, but I didn't know existed before doing this research. So that's cool. Also, it's led me to work with some contemporary composers from Mexico and Spain.
Wow.
A few years ago, I did that. And so if I wasn't interested in getting to know different like Latin American cultures mm-hmm. And the music that exists in those places, like I don't know if I would have ended up doing that.
For sure. So, you've kind of opened up that whole avenue for yourself that many people, I assume, would never even know about or never even be open to trying, I suppose, as well. That's great. And that's also kind of one of your research goals, too, like kind of just more visibility. That's the word I was looking for. Visibility.
There you go.
More visibility for this region, for music and artistry, for sure. Amazing. What do you think is a common misconception about your field?
I don't know if this is a misconception, but I think not everyone necessarily knows what music students do in university or know what musicology is. I think lots of people, well, I don't know lots of people. I think generally people think that studying music involves just playing your instrument all day and you have a rehearsal sometimes and then you just go away and you practice your instrument a little bit more and it's just sort of, that's it and it's really fun. Yes, a large part of it is that, but it's also academic classes. We have history classes and theory classes and ear training classes. And musicology is different again because it's focused on music research rather than performing music. So it's sort of like the sociology or anthropology, but for music.
Yeah, so. For sure. Like solely focused on music.
Yeah.
Which is a huge part of our culture and different cultures, different societies. I totally agree. As another music student, I totally agree that that's kind of, I tell people what I'm doing in my degree and they're kind of like, I haven't heard about that. Like, what do you even do? What does that even mean? I think that's also why I invited you to come on to Beyond the Jargon and talk about musicology, because I do think it's a department that exists in any music department in universities around the world, but I don't think people immediately think about musicology when they think of a music department. They think of musicians, they think of performers. And a lot of the time, musicologists are also musicians and performers, but are focused on the research aspect and talking about the history of music, music culture, and things like you've mentioned. What do you think will be next for you after this chapter? Do you have any plans, or it's okay if there's nothing too?
That's totally I don't know.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
I'm considering going into like humanitarian human rights work or getting a job like working as a technical writer so I can do some traveling while I work and work remotely or something like that. But I'm also really enjoying working as a music teacher right now, so I might continue that for a little while and see if I want to continue that as an option.
I guess if you're a music teacher, would you want to stay in Victoria or maybe move or...
I want to live somewhere else for a little while just to see what it's like. I've been here for a long time.
Yeah, fair enough.
But who knows? I might end up coming back here.
It's a great place to be. I mean, I'm glad that I ended up here. So, final question. I was going to ask this at the start, but I totally forgot. We are in a radio station. We love music here. I'm just curious, besides your thesis work, what kind of music are you listening to right now that you're really loving?
I listen to a whole range of music. It's not just classical music.
Also maybe a common misconception for music students. They only listen to classical
music. Oh yeah, that's definitely not the case. I'll go through times where I'll listen to a lot of classical music and I'll go through times where I do not want to listen to classical music at all, and I'll listen to, I don't even know, literally whatever shows up on my Spotify.
Amazing. Great. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Cleo, for being on the podcast. Best of luck with the rest of your studies.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Cleo. I invited Cleo on the podcast because I wanted to hear from a student studying music without a major focus on performance. As we discussed earlier, I thought it was important to highlight the work being done at this level in analyzing and promoting music research, especially centered around areas and regions that aren't always talked about as much. If you're interested in Cleo's performance classwork that we mentioned, or would like to engage more with the School of Music and events they host, visit finearts.uvic.ca/music/calendar/events. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Beyond the Jargon on CFUV 101.9 FM, and I hope you'll tune into our next episode. My name is Sam Kaiser. Thanks again for listening.